Have you heard about what's going on Easter Island? Those iconic and mysterious statues on Easter Island, which of course have been famed in legend and tiki bar lore, are now being threatened by rising sea levels. And some of the monuments are located closer to the slowly advancing shoreline and could eventually be damaged or washed away by the pounding surf of the South Pacific. And the action of the waves would also expose the rarely seen bodies of the figures. So a donation for a proposed seawall has been provided by Japan to prevent this tragedy from happening, and the idea is now undergoing testing. And you can read more about that in the Highlight Carousel up at Coast to Coast AM, where our webmaster, coasttocoastam.com, where our webmaster tonight, Greg Bishop, has posted that and other tantalizing tidbits. Just a programming note that I will be sitting in the Coast to Coast AM air chair again Saturday, April the 7th, Sunday, April the 8th, and Sunday, April the 29th. In the meantime, if you like what you hear, I invite you to check out my weekly syndicated radio program, The Conspiracy Show. It airs live Sunday nights at 11 p.m. Eastern out of Toronto on Zoomer Radio, AM 740, 96.7 FM. You can go to my website, strangeplanet.ca, for a list of affiliates. And if you can't find a station in your area that airs my station, or airs the program, rather, download my free Conspiracy Show app and you can listen anywhere in the world. And very quickly, two new podcasts that I launched, Conspiracy Unlimited. New episodes drop every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. You can subscribe just about anywhere or go to conspiracyunlimitedpodcast.com. And The Rock and Roll Twilight Zone, in partnership with Chris Jericho and the Jericho Network. New episodes drop Wednesday. Go to Apple Podcasts to subscribe. All right, back to more of my conversation with Dr. Frank Albo as we discuss Astana, the strangest capital city in the world, right here on Coast to Coast. The author of Astana, Architecture, Myth, and Destiny. Let's continue our tour of this remarkable city. And now we'll get to the Palace of Peace and Reconciliation. This is the Pyramid of Peace and Accord, and it's a pyramid, all right. But tell me more.
Okay, I thought we'd discuss that one, but sure enough, it was designed by Norman Foster, who's designed many, like the Gherkin, for instance, in London, the new Apple headquarters, the billion-dollar circular project. Well, what he intended to do here is that your journey through the building is meant to take you from darkness to light. So you enter into the womb of the earth, as it were, in this darkened setting, and you take this journey up to this cascading apex at the top. And it's at the top of the pyramid. I mean, it couldn't get any more Illuminati than that. World religious leaders meet to discuss the harmony of the world. I can't make it up. That's what happens.
All right. Now, why did, I guess you've sort of answered this in a way, but I'm going to ask it from a slightly different angle. And that is, why did Nazarbayev choose sort of Sumerian myths, to build the city upon? What about Kazakhstan's myths and Kazakhstan's legends?
Well, in Kazakhstan, it is believed that the ancient culture of Kazakhstan derives from the culture of Sumer, and in particular, their ancestral religion, which is known as Tengriism, itself is of Sumerian heritage. In Sumerian, for instance, the illustration that lets you know that you're dealing with the divine world is the epigram called the Dingir. It's a star-like symbol that indicates, when you're reading cuneiform text, that you're dealing with the divine state. And this element of Sumerian culture and many others have are part of the bedrock of Kazakhstani identity. They, in many respects, consider themselves to be the progenitors of Sumerian culture, because even before Sumer and before the cultures of of Egypt, what we consider to be the cradles of civilization, there were three great innovations that came from the nomadic cultures of Central Asia. It was the invention of the wheel and axle, the domestication of the horse, and perhaps the greatest innovation, Indo-European language, so Proto-Indo-European. It's the mother language of Greek, Latin, the Romance languages of Europe, and including Sanskrit. So all of these languages have a trunk language, and this trunk language is called Proto-Indo-European, and that's the mother language of Central Asia, of which Kazakhstan is a part. So they don't necessarily see themselves as borrowing from Sumer, but actually being in many respects even older than the culture of Sumer.
Interesting. So this isn't simply a case of cultural appropriation. There is, I mean, they can trace, you know, mass migrations and so forth. There's a real link here, a genuine
right.
link.
I mean, this is, to a large degree, is even appropriated in the emblemata of state. So if you look at the symbols of the state, they're drawing upon this pre-Islamic, because Kazakhstan today is about 70% Islamic, not the same form of radicalized Islam or Wahhabism that had tried to have a foothold in Kazakhstan, but a very tolerant, much more connected to the mystical dimension of Islam that deals with Sufism. But even before that, the emblems of the state all draw upon these pre-contact, ancient Sumerian and to themselves indigenous symbols and themes. So that's why you see the sun, the throughout the iconography of the state, the eagle is throughout the iconography of state, blue, gold. These are ideas that come from this affinity to not only Sumer, but the cultures before that. This is why this whole drama of the city is evokes in the most dramatic setting, the Tree of Life, and this whole story from Etana, the oldest myth in world history.
I have to ask you about the Palace of Creativity. It goes by the name the Dog Bowl. It certainly does look like a dog bowl. Tell me about that.
Okay, well, it's the Palace of the Arts, and that's right in Independence Square. So it's designed to look like a crater, but many of the features in Astana are driven by geometry and abstract symbolism. It was the belief that using geometrical forms, these primordial forms appeal to the psyche of Kazakhstani people. What's curious about that is that this is very Platonic in its idea, in that geometry is the way shower of knowledge and education. Many school children, for instance, learn geometry through studying the buildings in the capital. So if you want to know about a trapezoid or a 3-4-5 triangle, it is not studied in the classroom. It's actually studied through the buildings of the state. So the one that you mentioned, the Palace of the Arts, it looks like, yes, a crater, but beneath that, it's meant to evoke this idea of geometry as this expressive form of representing ancient Kazakh identity.
Now, is Nazarbayev, is he planning to take this concept and rebuild all of Kazakhstan like this, sort of one city, one village at a time, or is it simply the capital?
So the capital is obviously the axis mundi for the state, but there are many other planned capitals that were meant to signify different things. It's very interesting that they've employed city planning in this way, because for the most part, there are of a nomadic heritage. They're not a sedentary culture. So for instance, there is four new planned cities that were designed to evoke certain themes. One city is designed strictly for sport and advancement in sport. Another city is designed simply for entertainment. The whole of the city is designed simply for entertainment. If you wanted to go and and so on. And there's another city called the Green City, which is all dedicated towards green ecology. The Astana is a project in the making. So it was designed from scratch to have a finite number of citizens, 3 million, no more than that, because that would lead to urban squalor. Even the height to the curb to height ratio was all detailed and planned by looking at all the other capitals and seeing what was the best orientation. The they have a master plan office that looks at all the submissions for architecture and always looks to the master plan. The master plan is something that we don't see cities in this way, that we see master plans with sheets of music or maybe with poetry, but this city was designed with a master plan, and they constantly go back to it as a way of saying, okay, this is within the both the symbolism of the state, and there's a kind of check mark system in which whether they will adopt a project or not.
How close is Kazakhstan sort of from, I guess, I don't know, having its coming out party, maybe it already has, but I mean, how is Nazarbayev trying to position himself? Is he going to cozy up? I mean, he was in Washington. He visited a state visit to the United States, but he does have a large ethnic Russian population. So does he see himself sort of caught in the middle? Is he playing both sides against each other? Is he trying to be a bridge? How do you see that?
Well, he's a very strategic world leader in the sense that he knows how to play the emergence of the state and this essentially indigenous Kazakhstan for him, for instance, and for many people within the Nazarbayev regime, is that the state is 550 years old, and this is something that they promulgate. Although at the same time, he wants to be open to Western ideas, but not entirely democracy. For him, democracy is something that should be managed first, and then, and as you rightly noted at the beginning of our talk, that it should they should focus on the economy and then later democracy. For me, my interest in studying Nazarbayev is I thought numerous books had already been written about him, and actually they should be explored. They're in my bibliography. But I was interested in more tackling the buildings themselves, using the buildings and doing a deep analysis of each of the buildings to see what it is that's actually there.
So tell us about this intriguing contest. I've never heard anything like this. I think it's absolutely brilliant. And you have sort of embedded codes throughout this book. And, well, you tell me, how does this work?
Okay, so it is unique in that I don't know of another book of the, of its kind in which it combines rigorous history with a very sophisticated treasure hunt. And by sophisticated, I don't mean it's terribly hard. It's not. Everything is so clearly there. And after about two decades of studying the symbolism of secret societies and esoteric philosophy and coded languages and coded texts, I decided to appropriate that in the design of this treasure hunt in the book. I worked directly with Cliff Johnson, who is was David Blaine's puzzle master, and he and I worked very closely on, but I have to give the design to him entirely. It's brilliantly designed by him, but it's so inside the book, and this was let me get to the heart of it, that there behind the garment of this book is the real message of the book, okay? And this message is one that I'm beckoning my readers to look at very closely. Each word, each page of this, the selection of photographs are all very well placed for a very particular reason. So when you ask me what is this book about, I can tell you the garment of the text, just in the same way that when the Bible was first being translated from Greek into Hebrew, the Septuagint, the 70 scholars said, this is impossible because you will lose the nuance of the text People will just get the superficial reading of things like Balaam's ass or the circumcision of Moses' son, a very strange account in Exodus, and you'll miss the deeper allegorical reading. And those who look even more deeply into the reading of the Bible will see the real message behind the Bible. And being motivated by this, I decided, okay, if you want to look at Nazarbayev, fine. If you're interested in Illuminati architecture, fine. But if you really want to get into the bedrock of meaning, not just in this book, but the power of myth in general, I have placed this prize. So the first person to find the message inside this book, and it's very clear and unambiguous, you will win a $30,000 prize. And the $30,000 prize consists of 2 first-class tickets to Astana, $5,000 to spend there, and 7 nights in a 5-star hotel. So this is, and I've been there many times, and you will freak out when you visit Astana. It is off the hook. This is like, this is makes Dubai look like Cleveland.
That's a brilliant analogy. Dubai looks like Cleveland. All right. So what are the particulars? How do you enter?
Okay. So you go on. Well, obviously, you want to get the book. And then you submit your answer on what's called the challenge on my website, astanamyth.com. And I've had several hundred submissions, maybe 1,000 by now. The prize is wide open. And in fact, by the end of this year, the prize ends at the end of this year, December 31st, 2018. But I'm going to extend the prize and add Bitcoin to the prize. So if you're interested in cryptocurrency, which you should be, I think it's the revolution of our time, then that will be also part of the prize. This will be, and I'm going to continue to grow it until somebody gets it. And I'm really trying to get people to read it at a much deeper level. Use your imagination. Plumb the secrets of this book. It is full of enigmas, not the superficial reading.
So again, the website, it is Astana, A-S-T-A-N-A, myth.com, astanamyth.com. They can also order the book through the website?
Yes, that's right. It's an Amazon. I think all the major bookstores are holding it.
Okay, so you get the book, you pore over it, and then once you think that you've decoded and you've determined the message of the book, then you can go back to the astanamyth.com website and submit your answer.
That is correct.
All right. Speaking of Bitcoin and cryptocurrency, what is the currency of Kazakhstan? Are they looking to go into a digital or a cryptocurrency?
Absolutely. The World Expo site, which is a building that perhaps you could do a simple Google search for now, it's the largest sphere in the world. It was initially dedicated to the future of sustainable energy. And as part of this project, now that the expo has ended, the World Expo in Astana, they now want to become one of the global centers for cryptocurrency development, blockchain development, and cryptocurrency research.
And I guess that sort of answers my question, which was, is Kazakhstan open for business? I mean, they're not a communist country. In fact,
yeah.
I think they banned the Communist Party.
Mm-hmm.
So is there a lot of international investment now happening?
Yes, very much so. It's open for business. You don't need a visa. It's really unique. It's the jewel of Central Asia in the sense that it is not part of the same class of stands that you might associate it with, it like Tajikistan or Afghanistan. This is really a unique marvel in the least likely place to survive. It's sandwiched between Mother Russia and Mother China. And both of them vying for this interlocutor of power, Kazakhstan has uniquely carved out its own unique heritage, culture, and style. And
all right. I'm going to carve out a little time for callers to participate with questions and comments, and we'll do that after the break with Frank Albo. Here's Zach Brown, the Zach Brown Band, taking us into the break with Knee Deep on Coast to Coast AM. Stay with us. All right. When we come back, we'll take your questions and comments for Dr. Frank Elbo as we continue to delve into the strangest capital city in the world, Astana, Kazakhstan. And I'll also ask him about this pentagram that has been carved out of the Kazakhstan steppe. What's that all about? We'll find out on the other side. Coast to Coast AM. Dr. Frank Elbo stays with us. Astana, Architecture, Myth, and Destiny. Once again, if you want to get in on this remarkable, intriguing contest, and it's kind of a treasure hunt within the pages of this remarkable book, if you can sort of decode, find the overall sort of overarching message that is encoded in this book, then you could win yourself a $30,000 luxury vacation in Astana, the capital of Kazakhstan. Now, Frank, I wanted to ask you about this pentagram. I don't think it's anywhere near Astana, but it's I think you can see it on Google Earth. It's this pentagram, this five-pointed star surrounded by a circle. That's a pentagram, and it's carved into I think it's the southern shore of this Tobol Reservoir. What's that all about?
Yep. I know that's correct. It's one of the three major discoveries that happened in Kazakhstan that raised eyebrows. It's a 1,200-foot pentagram carved on the side of a desolate lake. It was dubbed for quite some time, I don't know if it still is on Google Earth, as the Satan's pentagram or the devil pentagram. Archaeologists have now concluded that it is merely the remains of an old Soviet summer camp. The five-pointed star was the emblem symbol of the Soviet Union, but it has led to this, along with other recent archaeological discoveries, for instance, a Bronze Age step pyramid was also found in Kazakhstan. Initially they thought it was Bronze Age, but it's now around 800 BCE, so much later than the step pyramid at Saqqara in Egypt. And additionally, and this is very fascinating, is they found a collection of large earthworks, geometrical earthworks, similar to the Nazca Plains in Peru, except these are massive, large-scale geometrical projects from perhaps 800 BCE. Some speculation has shown it could go back to about 5,000 BCE, so around contemporary with the culture of Sumer. And among the many symbols that were found there is one of the earliest swastikas that we have. So I open my book by saying, here's a giant pyramid, a giant pentagram, and a swastika. Do I have your attention? Look closely at this book.
But the swastika would be it's a Sanskrit symbol, is it not?
That's correct.
That was co-opted by the Nazis.
Correct. Co-opted and inverted, but there's an entire Sanskrit Vedic treatise on ideal town planning, and the swastika was considered one of the eight most important ways to design your city. That, ladies and gentlemen, is a clue to my puzzle. So each time that I give do an interview, I love providing some kind of clue, and there it is.
Excellent. All right. Now, let me just drill down on that point. Why is it the ideal way to lay out a city in the shape of the Sanskrit swastika?
Right. Because
what are the benefits?
Well, just in terms of panoptic. Being able to see all sides of the expansion of the city. So one way to do it would be radially. That's how the Romans did it, or through what is known as a cardo or decumanus, a cross section or templum. Another is like this. So in Vedic culture, there were seven other ways to design a city, but this one was considered one of the most ideal. Obviously, it's a benevolent symbol for them, and how it was co-opted by Hitler is another matter.
Right. So I guess the next time we see some U.S. military installation from Google Earth that's laid out like a swastika, we shouldn't jump to the conclusion that this is the rise of the Fourth Reich. It's simply a design principle at work here.
Well, that is if they consulted this 3rd century Vedic text, which I doubt they did, but yes.
All right. East of the Rockies, Charles is in Elgin, Texas. Good morning, Charles. Welcome to Coast AM.
Hey there. Wow. Hi, Frank. Boy, I sure would love to meet you. I don't know, maybe give you a big hug or something. But because this book, in order to put this code in there and all the sort of stuff you had to do with it, and of course I just loved it that finally, after all this time, somebody is actually covering what's going on in Kazakhstan. There's some, it's just an amazing thing that they're doing over there. But the thing is, you must have had a really excellent, a very insightful printer to put this thing together. So I'm kind of wondering, how in the heck did you find a printer who could actually do this sort of a thing? You know, make sure all the pictures are in the right places and all the, you know, all the words and everything else, or all the clues are where they need to be and all that. So.
Well, I can't give that credit to the printer, although it was done very well. But instead, with myself and my designer, the selection of images there were selected from a corpus of about 10,000 to choose these precise, these particular photos and their precise location. There is a lot going on if you read between the lines in the book.
Did your designer have a particular person or something that he referred to for the actual, you know, physical putting of the books together?
Yeah, no one knows. Only two people know the solution, so no, not even the designer, the printer. Nobody knows the solution.
Yeah, I'm not fishing for the solution, so but that's good. You know, I will do it fairly. So,
yeah, knock yourself out. No, really, I wish you nothing but the greatest of success.
All right, Charles. Good luck with that.
I have to say, to write a scholarly work and then afterwards work just as diligently to seamlessly embed a coded message.
Right, because these little Easter eggs that are hidden in there also have to make sense not only as a subtext but also as part of the text. So they can't be glaringly, you know, just kind of stuck in there, hodgepodge. There is a real trick to that.
Oh, oh my God, it was excruciating. But yes, and when you get the final subtext, the whole work will take on a whole new meaning.
Is there any concern? I mean, I know this. Now we're getting into a little bit of geopolitics, and that's not the purpose of writing the book. But is there any concern that Kazakhstan, because I mentioned the ethnic Russian population there, that we could have another Ukraine situation on our hands?
I don't think so. But Kazakhstan is not a military rival. They are an economic powerhouse. They have a very interesting relationship with the surrounding great nations, and they've managed to carve this out with mostly peace.
What else do they have going for them besides oil and gas? I mean, as if that isn't enough, obviously, but what else do they have?
They have the full house: oil, gas, diamonds, uranium, and gold.
Wow. So where is their GDP ranking right now? Do you know?
It's been growing rapidly. I think it's in maybe 80. I can't remember off the top of my head. But yes, it was even during the 2007-2008 financial crisis, it was experiencing digit growth. One of the few countries that were.
And is it likely to become, for example, a banking center?
Well, one of the elements of the Astana International Financial Center is a new form of lending based on Islamic praxis, which means non-usury, but it's done in quite a unique way. And as I mentioned, they also want to be a world center for cryptocurrency research and also dissemination.
And I'm just looking at some of the residential buildings, actually some of these high rises. I don't know if you're familiar with any of the buildings just west of here in Mississauga, but there's actually a similarity. I've seen some of these here in Canada.
You got it. The Emerald Towers.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Very much so.
Interesting. Interesting. Tell me about this big tent.
Okay.
Have we talked about that yet? I don't think we have.
No, it's called the Khan Tengri Entertainment Center, and that's pretty much what it is. It's the world's largest outdoor tent, and at the apex of this tent is a complete beach and indoor water slide, but throughout the tent is an everyday shopping mall experience, but brought to a kind of Xanadu-esque pleasure dome. Very Bucky Fuller, if you know the great American inventor and architect.
Sure, sure, Buckminster yep. Fuller. And the Kazakhstan Central Concert Hall, this is one of the most unusual, I don't know even how to describe this building and create a mental image for people.
Well,
they look like a sail, and then one on its side, and kind of almost like a flower. It's kind of hard to describe.
Yeah, it's called the origami flower, or for Kazakh people, the cabbage. Each of the buildings of Astana have a different code name. So the Bayterek Tower, which we mentioned, is called the Lollipop. The Central Concert Hall is unique in that it incorporates certain very ancient principles in architecture derived from the medieval world, and it epitomizes bioclimactic architecture. So it uses sustainability of the winds of the steppe to actually create a sense of energy efficiency in the building. It's unique. Its morphological articulations were expressly designed to use the natural environment, use the desert steppe winds to create an interconnection and relationship with nature and the design. But the design itself is deeply psychological. It draws on biology and anthropology, botany, urban history. It's a marvelous building.
East of the Rockies, Melissa is in South Carolina. Good morning, Melissa. Welcome to Coast AM.
Hello. I've got a Wall Street Journal Weekend article in front of me, and this is not why I called. My question is very complicated, but I'm looking at this article on David Byrne, and he's got a picture in here of Astana, the capital of the
David Byrne, as in Talking Heads, David Byrne.
Well, I'm a globe-trotting musician, yes.
Right, there you go.
That
okay.
was, I was doing this in between listening to you all, but my call is about previous shows on Coast to Coast, where I've been trying to understand the Khazars, or the Khazars, the Jews that came from Mongolia and or Russia and or China and or the Stans. And I noticed the connection between Kazakh and Khazar, and a lot of vowels and consonants in different languages are interchangeable. And so is there some connection there?
Well, that's very astute of you to note that, because yes, there is certainly an ancient Judaic presence in the Silk Road region of Kazakhstan. They're a unique cultural entity and language family. They are Turkic people, but have incorporated both Tengrianism, this ancient form of ancestor worship and association with nature, with principles that come from Judaism. So a very polyethnic, a real representation of what we call in my city, folkorama, a folkorama of ethnicity. But here, yes, certainly present. And one of the largest synagogues I've ever visited was in Astana. So yes, there's a presence of all the different cultures in one unique place.
Thank you for the call, Melissa. Great question. Do they have any crime issues in this is a big city, 3 million people. You would expect
it'd be presently 1 million, but it's
1 million. Okay.
To grow more than 3 million.
Right. Any crime issues?
No, There is, I wouldn't describe it as a police state, but it's exceptionally clean. There's very little crime, and the city is something that most Kazakhstani people are very proud of. I mean, there's some obviously disenfranchised by the move of the capital and what it means for in the mind of the president. But for the most part, it's at least the 8 times that I visited, it very welcoming. Kazakh people have a exceptionally hospitable just by nature.
And is it an open society in the sense that you can come and go as you please? Could you travel unaccompanied there? Can you, or do you have to? Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's it's not what you would expect. It's certainly not the image that Borat has projected. Yeah, it's very modern, very open. You know, women drive. Very free and largely metropolitan.
And outside the capital, what is it?
Now that's
is it
a totally different thing. Yeah, so it's kind of Las Vegas-esque in that sense that, you know, you leave the strip and then you're like, where am I? Astana is very much that. I mean, this area of the world is absolutely barren, and out of this barren place rises this remarkable city.
It's a country of about, what, 16 million people, so 15 million live in outlying regions of Kazakhstan. Are they poor?
Yes.
So hopefully he'll start to use Nazarbayev. We'll start to use some of the revenue from these vast resources, obviously, to help, you know, lift these people out of poverty. He's not going to continue to pour the country's revenues into these mega projects, or is he?
No, there is a finality to the design of the city and the buildings going on there, but it is a mega project. It's probably the largest mega project undergoing, perhaps only second to the developments in the UAE and that part of the world.
Have you met Nazarbayev?
I have not. I think I was told by a colleague that he has received the book and it is in his personal library.
Ah, what would you say to him if you met him?
I don't know. I've never, I don't know. I think I would just be frank in myself.
Well, listen, I have to congratulate you. It's a beautiful book. It's a fascinating book. It's an intriguing a treasure hunt contained within its pages. And again, people go to astanamyth.com to order the book and partake in the contest. Frank, thank you so much for this.
Thank you.
All right, that is it for me, and I'll see you all in April, right? That's it. My thanks to Lisa Lyon, Stephanie Smith, George Norrie, George Knapp, Chris Burrows, Dan Galanti, Nathan Staten, Donna Walker. Here in Toronto, of course, Patrick O'Neill, Robert Turner, Mike Ben Dixon, my musical director in Brantford, Scott Flicks. All of you for listening. Thank you for your ears and your voices, your beautiful voices. I'm Richard Serrett. This is Coast to Coast AM. So long for now.